Miami Memoirs presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of Florida attorney Lewis M. Ress. Miami Memoirs uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful, and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. From multi-million-dollar land deals to the ghostly aftermath of an Everglades plane disaster via a prematurely deep-frozen cat, these tales feature a parade of unforgettable characters, all sharply observed by a storyteller with a very human empathy for ordinary and extraordinary individuals caught up in the law.
Lewis has just released a new book, Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Fans of strange cases and wild tales will need no introduction to the author's brilliant and fast-paced storytelling, laced with salty evocations of the human carnival of the era and shot through with compassionate insight. From advising the heir to Colonel Sanders and falling out with Buddy Hackett to nighttime jogging with Vitas Gerulaitis, the stories keep on coming. Larry the charismatic wheeler dealer needs to be rescued from yet another risky deal, and a bridge-playing mobster needs help to find his missing daughter. All this and more, along with sage advice against buying a lottery ticket you might win. Welcome to round two. And now, let's begin.
Hi everyone, welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Lewis Rez. I'm your host, Jeanette Garcia, and today we're on episode 46, The Second Richest Man in the World. So Lewis, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, super terrific.
Good.
In Spanish, we say terrifico.
I'm giving Spanish
lessons. You can learn it very fast. Terrifico means terrific.
Yeah, just add
Fantastico.
An O.
Fantastico, what does that mean?
Fantastic.
So you're getting there. You're a natural.
Good. So the next episode sounds pretty interesting. Who was the second richest man in the world?
Well, you would have never guessed that Wallace Groves was the second richest man in the world at the time. Anyhow, that's what I was told.
Okay.
My law partner, George Case, had gone to work for Wallace Groves as president of the Great Bahama Island Enterprise Corporation, and he had brought me in as an American attorney, supposedly knowledgeable in Bahamian real estate and Bahamian commercial litigation.
And what was he like?
Wallace Groves? Well, initially, I was introduced to Mr. Groves in his office. He was balding. He had a round face with a friendly smile, and he wore a dark suit with a white shirt and a dark tie. He also owned 40 square miles of land, which translated into 140,000 acres, which became the thriving city of Freeport, Grand Bahama Island.
Oh, wow. And did Mr. Groves build his own city?
From what I was told, the initial intention was to cut lumber on the property, but I had my doubts. Wallace Groves started the Grand Bahama Port Authority, which was the government of Freeport, with autonomous powers to tax, regulate industry, develop a city, and establishing gambling casinos.
Oh, wow. How did this all come about?
This all came about from legislation passed by the government in Nassau going back to 1955. The primary business was a seaport bunkering facility where deep-drafted tankers unloaded oil, which was then stored and transshipped in small vessels to shallow water ports or even up rivers in America. And there were hotels, a large residential development, downtown shopping malls, banks, restaurants, an international airport, and two casinos.
Was this a tax haven?
Well, further, in addition to owning the casinos, Wallace Groves made his money from import duties and licensing fees. So there were no income taxes or real property taxes in the Bahamas. And Wallace Groves paid no taxes at all.
What was his background?
I knew that in the 30s, Mr. Groves had had some problems with the law, probably being involved in a tax fraud conviction, which put him in jail for a year. Actually, it was a catch-all mail fraud, and it involved a securities violation, and he served 2 years. But that was a long, long time ago, and he was to become my client, so I could forgive him.
Okay. And what was this meeting with Mr. Groves all about?
You know, by the way, every person is entitled to legal representation, and you can't be in total judgment of your client. Mm. Even criminals are entitled to the protection of the law and the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So when you represent somebody, although you're lumped with them in society, and they say birds of a feather flock together, you are actually under obligation morally and ethically to protect their rights, to undertake some unpopular causes.
Mm.
The American Nazi Party needs attorneys, and they're entitled to representation. I don't like it, but someone's got to do it.
Huh.
So they get a public defender.
Right.
There's a number of organizations that supply lawyers for those causes.
Hmm. I would have a tough time doing that job. So what was this meeting with Mr. Groves all about?
Well, Wallace's administrative assistant had put in a call to me, and they set up a meeting at his home. It was more like his home was like a modern glass mansion on a private beach with lots of cut stone and glass all over, overlooking a magnificent blue ocean with a private beach. It was wonderful.
Hmm.
It had a glazed, bright blue tile roof, probably made in China. And he answered the door himself. I went out there and rang the bell. And he was wearing tan slacks with a sharp crease and brown linen sports shirt and a soft brown loafers. His eyes were bright, and he looked directly at you when he talked. And he said, "Lewis, I'm having a bit of tussle with D.K. Ludwig over a difference of about $250,000, and I thought that you might be able to speak to him for me."
And who was D.K. Ludwig?
I said, "Wallace, do you mean the D.K. Ludwig? He's supposedly the richest man in the world. No offense, Wallace. I hardly know him. I only met him once." And Mr. Groves said, "Well, why don't you try talking to them on the phone? I'm willing to split the difference and accept $125,000. I said, "Wallace, of course I'll try. Do you have his private number? I don't even know if he'll accept my call."
And what were you thinking at the moment?
I wasn't expecting this. And my mind went into a research mode. Who was D.K. Ludwig? D.K. Ludwig was very much like Wallace Groves. He was about 10 years older. And he had started out as a teenager, shipping molasses on the Great Lakes. He owned about 60 oil tankers. He also owned the Xanadu Princess Hotel right there in Freeport. Actually, he owned the entire Princess Hotel chain worldwide. He also liked lumbering, and he had acquired 50 square miles, God knows how many hectares, of jungle in the Amazon, with the idea of fabricating a paper pulp mill and producing newsprint.
Wow.
And he had built the plant in two long, thin sections, somewhere in Asia, maybe in Korea, and had it shipped through the Panama Canal in two sections on barges, and then joined together on the site in the Amazon.
Wow, and all that was able to squeeze through there in the Panama Canal?
Yeah, that's the only way he could get it through the Panama Canal, to have it built like that in two slim pieces. The Brazilian authorities harassed him with never-ending bribes. They refused permits. They set up roadblocks until he finally gave up the project, and he dropped probably over $1 billion.
Wow, that's a lot of corruption there.
In those days, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And D.K. Ludwig also had a bad back. And when I met him the first time, he was bent over in pain. But he was still very friendly. And he told me then that he was on his way to the Leahy Clinic in Boston for his back. I remembered a lot more. He and Wallace were also known to have short fuses. So it would be best to keep Wallace off the telephone. So what happened next? Well, Wallace was escorting me into the study, and he's showing me the phone. And it was like a dream. I dialed the number he provided, and it was answered on the first ring. And I said, "Mr. Ludwig, this is Lewis Ress calling you. I'm one of Wallace Groves' attorneys." And Mr. Ludwig immediately responded, "Lewis, I know just who you are. How are you, Lewis?" I said, "Sir, is your back any better?" He said, "You know, I'm doing a lot better. Thank you for remembering. I know what you're calling me about, that $250,000 issue with Wallace." I said, "Yes, Mr. Ludwig, people at the level of you and Wallace Groves should not have an issue over this kind of a matter. It's so important for you both to work together in a friendly way and to be allies. Won't you just split it with Wallace?" He says, "You're absolutely right. I'll split it. Give Wallace my best. Bye. And that was the whole conversation. Wallace Groves was standing next to me, and I was nodding, and I was thinking how much I would bill him for the service. You know, I flew over there. Yeah. He looked at me, and he said, Lewis, I'm not paying a legal fee for that. I said, boy, those guys are not stupid. I said, Wallace, I wouldn't dream of billing you for that.
That's really funny.
Yeah, well, he said, it's interesting because when he says, I'm not paying you, you better say, yes, you are. You're going to lose a client and a friend.
Yeah.
And he's a powerful man.
Right.
So you got to be very careful. Mm-hmm. Then he said, Lewis, are you going back to Miami now? I said, yes, sir, I am. I'm on the Eastern Airlines flight, but I'm flying for you, and I fly tourist class. He says, I'll join you on the Eastern flight, and I'll fly tourist class, too. We can make it easily. I said, Wallace, you've got 5 planes. Why don't you use one of your own planes? He smiled, and he said, well, one's being used by the staff, one's in Nassau, two are being serviced.
So what did you do?
Well, we boarded the Eastern Airlines Miami flight. It was flying from the airport that he owned.
Uh-huh.
He owned the airport.
Yeah.
And we walked directly through the aisle in the Eastern Airlines flight and passed through the first class section, which was divided into 2 parts. We walked through the aisle right up the middle and on our way back to the tourist class. And almost every seat in first class was occupied by an employee of Wallace's.
Wow.
After we passed them, they were bribing the flight attendants to have their seats moved to the back to tourist class.
Wow, that's really funny. Yeah, they wanted to be back there with the boss, huh?
Yeah, and by the way, D.K. Ludwig liked to fly tourist class, too.
Oh.
They were skinflints. They had to make a buck and keep it.
Yeah.
Well.
What ended up happening to Mr. Groves?
Well, Wallace Groves ultimately died of a heart attack. I think he was in his 80s. And D.K. Ludwig died, too. He was 95.
Mm.
And few people who know or today know who they were or care even. Why, there's still a competition to be the richest man in the world, but I assure you that he doesn't fly tourist class.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nowadays, you don't see that as much. That was a great story. There's quite a bit to discuss here. So let's bring things up to date.
Well, what's happened?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I told you D.K. Ludwig died. He was 95.
Uh-huh.
He was the richest man in the world, probably.
Mm-hmm.
He was the father of the supertanker.
Mm.
And he gave most of his money to charity. And by the way, a lot of the billionaires today are giving their money to charity, starting with Bill Gates started it and said it's the end thing to do, to give your money away. You earned it from this country and give it back and don't give it to your kids. So I'm sure they give a lot to their kids.
Yeah.
But D.K., he controlled over 200 companies. He wound up giving his money to the Institute for Cancer Research, and he set up 6 professorships. And he owned oil, gas, coal, minerals, hotels, real estate. He was involved in 25 different countries. And he donated over $2.6 billion to research. In those days, that was enormous.
That's a lot, yeah.
Because things are more than 10 times. So that was like $260 billion.
Yeah, in today's
$26
amount.
Billion, certainly.
That's a lot.
So Wallace Groves was in his 80s when he died in Miami. He had a stroke.
Oh.
And what happened in Freeport? Well, Wallace Groves went out of Freeport. He lost control of his company. If you look it up, if you Google it, they'll tell you that he sold the company. But I think Jack Hayward and a group took over had a hostile takeover of the company.
How'd that happen?
Well, it's all politics. He got in through Sir Stafford Sands, who was his attorney. And there was $1 million payment to the Bay Street Boys, the downtown Nassau crowd who ran the country and was one political party. And he got Freeport, he got the casinos, and he got the right to develop it. And I don't think he was interested in lumbering it at all. Hmm. He was interested in building a city and mainly the two casinos. Hmm. And he got involved with the casinos with some Canadians, Lou Chesler, and I think there were Miami interests. Mm. The Miami syndicate was involved in the casinos. Hmm. And I remember giving a lift one night on one of Larry's planes I had taken over to Freeport. I gave a lift back to one of Meyer Lansky's group. Mm. So I know that they were involved.
Or down there, yeah.
With that crowd. What do we learn? Well, we talk about money, mm-hmm. the wealthy people. The richest people today are, who's the richest person in the world today?
That's a good question. Is it Warren Buffett?
No. Oh. Warren's a sweetie pie. And he's down about number 7
oh, okay.
on my list. He's a nice guy. Warren is worth somewheres between 96 and 117 billion.
Wow. Okay.
That ain't nothing.
Oh, really?
Elon Musk is that was, my that
was,
book.
That was my second guess.
I think he's worth around 223 billion.
Wow.
He was worth 340 billion in November 2021. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to tell you
what
something.
What number is he on the list?
Huh?
What number is he on the list? Top? Is he number one?
Yeah, number one.
Wow.
Number two, Jeff Bezos.
Oh, yeah.
He was right up there, but now he's only worth, I think, around $178 billion. He's down. Mm. Now, where did these guys go to school? I looked at this up. Mm-hmm. Elon Musk went to Stanford and the University of Pennsylvania, the Wharton School. Hmm. And that's a big thing, Pennsylvania, the Wharton School.
Hmm. Tell me about it.
And Jeff Bezos went to Princeton. Hmm. Okay. Bill Gates, $131.4 billion. He had Microsoft. He went to Harvard. He was a dropout, but he got into Harvard. Okay. Larry Page, I'm just going to go through their education.
Yeah.
Larry Page is worth $114.4 billion. He owned Google. Okay. He went to Stanford. Hmm. Mark Zuckerberg, $97 billion. He's got Meta now. Facebook, he went to Harvard. Mm-hmm. And Phillips Exeter, before he went to Harvard. You heard of my discussion of all these prep schools.
Yeah.
Warren Buffett, he went to, he's got Berkshire Hathaway.
Yeah.
He went to University of Pennsylvania, Columbia University Business School, and the Wharton School. Hmm. Also Ivy League. Mm-hmm. All Ivy League schools. Sergey Brin. Who was owned into Alphabet and Google. Mm. He's worth $89 billion. He went to Stanford. Mm. Steve Ballmer, he also had Microsoft, $68.7 billion. He went to Harvard, and he went to Stanford and quit. Mm. Larry Ellison, Oracle, huh? Mm-hmm. Also Tesla, software company. He's worth about $119.5 billion. He went to the University of Chicago. So what are you learning? It's all Ivy League schools. Yeah. Remember I told you where they all go to school, prep schools, and how they get in, and they have tutors, and they make donations. You know the fraud deal that went on in UCLA and the University of Southern California, and the parents were paying. And that was a fraud because they said they were on the rowing team or something. That was a baloney.
Yeah.
It was a bribe. Mm-hmm. But these fellows do it legitimately. They make a donation, and they set up a foundation in advance, and they donate to cancer and the medical schools. And universities are thrilled to get that money, and they're very nice to them. Mm-hmm. And they're all Gates went to a very fancy prep school, Bill Gates, and his family is very wealthy. And he started out with a platinum spoon in his mouth.
Yeah.
So you look at all these guys. Where they come from, and how they made their money. Well, let's talk about Warren Buffett for a minute. You talked about Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
I gave you. I didn't tell you about Bernard Arnault.
Who's that?
Bernard Arnault is worth $170.8 billion. He went to the École Polytech or Polytechnique in Paris. He owns Moët, the Champagne, Hennessy, Louis Vuitton, Dior.
Wow, yeah.
Other than that, he's a poor guy. So he went to a top school. The École Polytechnique is a top school in Paris, So in France. So they all went, and Bill Gates started this charitable thing. He said, give all your money away. Warren Buffett gave him a lot of money to give to charity because he said he knows more about it than I do. So Warren Buffett. Everyone loves Warren Buffett. You like Warren Buffett?
Yeah.
I never heard anyone say anything bad
He's
about
all right.
Warren Buffett. They don't like him.
I've never met him, but...
He still lives in his old house. But if you look at his old house, it's a very nice home. It's a big home. He lost a lot of money. Nobody talks about his losses. Did you know that he lost, in Dexter Shoe Company alone, he lost $9 billion on a stock swap? He swapped... Berkshire Hathaway stock for Dexter. And there were about 1,200 people working out of Massachusetts in the shoe company. And it went bankrupt because foreign competition. They were all the shoes were being built outside the country. They can tell you about that, all of them, the sneakers and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And they went out. Then he dropped $2 billion in the Kraft Heinz deal, the merger. And Kraft took over Heinz, and then he invested, and he went down $2 billion. So he lost $11 billion in two deals.
Wow.
It's not so perfect.
Yeah, no.
I was very interested in Warren Buffett. He's 90 years old. So I listened to a speech he gave. Very interesting speech. And he said, we're all the same. He's a sweetie pie. He said, what's this big deal about being rich? He said, you know, we all have two eyes and two ears and legs and arms and, you know, a car. The car gets you, safe car gets you from one place to the other. That's all it is, a means of transportation. And the clothing, he says, I can afford all kinds of clothes. They can't get it to fit me right. I don't look good in my clothes. He said, so we're really not that different. That was his point. And... he said, food, we eat the same food, you know. Well, I really like the man, but I think we're not all basically the same.
No,
I think that's
unfortunately.
The biggest nonsense in the world.
There's a lot of inequality.
Yeah. So start. Does money buy happiness? You bet it does. They say you can't buy money with happiness.
Happiness with money?
Yeah, you can't buy money with happiness. it's very interesting. What makes you happy? How much money do you need to be happy? Are there studies? Yeah, there's studies on everything. It's amazing. We don't have be prepared studies for the United States if we go to war. But we have studies about happiness.
Yeah.
So it takes about $75,000 a year to be happy.
$75,000.
Yeah, my wife says that's nonsense. She says, you actually... you have to have enough money to have a cushion for about 3 years where you don't have to worry about the stock market dropping and your 401k going down the tube and you're losing your job. You know what a RIF is, R-I-F? It's called reduction in force. People don't talk about it. In the military, you have that. Where you're, let's say, a lieutenant colonel with 20 years, going on 20 years, and they have a reduction in force and they throw you out. And you can come back as a captain in the reserves, or you have to go out and try to finish your time in reserve duty, going to meetings and stuff.
Oh, okay.
So there's a reduction in force and you lose your job. Manufacturing, you lose the government contract and they cut the staff down to half. They fire everybody. So people live on the edge.
Yeah, you can't control certain things.
They talk about medical. Everyone has medical care. Did you ever hear of a billionaire not getting on an organ transplant list?
No.
Not getting an organ transplant.
That's not, yeah.
You hear, oh, we need hearts. The guy with the pig heart died, you know.
Oh, he did.
They put the pig heart in him and he died.
Well, I'm not surprised.
But we don't have enough hearts. So one of my friends was thrown off the heart list because he got cancer.
Oh.
So that's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, they just have so many hearts. And another acquaintance who was Jamaican, very, very wealthy family from Jamaica, and he was in his 60s, and after 50, they don't like to give you a heart.
Right.
He was in his 60s, and he smoked, and he flew to London from Jamaica, mm-hmm. and they gave him a 20-year-old's heart, and he lived for another 5 or 10 years smoking and drinking.
Wow.
And then he died.
Wow.
So he got the heart. He had the money. I'm convinced let me just take it a couple of steps further. I'm going to tell you things that you may not know.
Yeah, I'm all about it.
The University of Miami Medical School, God bless them, they're wonderful. They have a program called Champions.
Mm-hmm.
Champions, if you give $60,000 a person, you get on the list. There's no waiting for you in the waiting rooms, in the reception. You need an appointment, you call Champions.
Oh,
the professor takes you in. You get on the front of the line. I can't get an appointment with a doctor called Champions.
Wow.
Oh, Mr. Rest, we'll call you right back. Bingo, get right in. What time is convenient for you? And they meet you at the entrance to the hospital.
Oh, no.
And they take you by the arm.
Yeah.
And they walk you through.
60,000.
Right into the doctor's examining room. And they say, oh, your records are stamped, champion.
Mm-hmm.
And you get VIP treatment right through.
Yeah, that's the way the world works.
That's how it works. Well, I got mine because I donated some money that my client gave me some discretion on. I donated it for research on Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave me credit for that donation.
Mm.
I had the right to pick where it went.
Okay.
So that's how I got mine.
Wow.
But did you ever hear of concierge medicine? Do you know what that is?
Mm-mm.
That's a new thing. The general practitioners, the internists, the cardiologists have a program. You pay them $3,000 to $6,000 per person a year.
Mm.
And you get on, and they have a limited practice. They only take 100 patients, let's say.
Yeah.
And they're on call to you. You have their cell phone number, and they'll take your call 24/7. The doctor himself.
Wow.
And you need to come in, you get right in. And you've got to go to the hospital to get you in. And you need a house call. Really, if it's called for, they'll come to your house.
Wow.
So that's called concierge medicine.
Hmm. Very convenient.
And that's when you're not rich, you can't pop
$5,000
a year, a person.
You'll wait a year before you can see the doctor.
Yeah. So do you like that?
Well, I don't like it, but yeah, it's true.
Okay.
It's true information.
So the question is, do I really want to be very rich?
Mm.
Well, that's coming up. What's very rich? Well, what's the top 1%? You know how much you have to be in the top 1%?
No.
In liquid assets? Pick a number. I'll tell you, you're going to be high.
Is it like 10 billion?
11.1 million.
Oh, wow.
That's
it's not even in the billions.
Yeah. And you're in the top 1%.
Wow. Okay.
11.1 million.
That's not that
much. Very few billionaires.
Yeah, that's not that
much.
And
to be ultra rich, how much do you need to be considered ultra rich?
Well, at least a billion, right?
Hmm?
At least a billion?
Over 30 million in liquid assets.
I'm shooting really high.
And you're ultra rich.
Yeah, I'm shooting really high here.
Huh?
I'm shooting high. I'm like
a
billion.
Yeah, I told you were going to be real high.
Yeah.
I knew that was coming. I know you. So, do you want to be really, really rich? I don't think you do. It's funny. Did you know who J. Paul Getty was?
Is he the Getty Museum?
Getty Oil.
Oh, Getty Oil.
The Getty Museums.
Okay.
He was a nasty guy. He was a cranky guy.
Huh.
And he had a grandson. And the grandson was talked about. He never got money from his grandpa. Getty never gave any of his grandchildren very much.
Huh.
And he had a public telephone booth in his castle in England.
Mm.
If you wanted to make a phone call from his house, you had to put a nickel in the phone. So he had a phone booth, public phone. He was a tough guy.
Yeah.
Well, his grandson gets kidnapped in Italy, I think.
Oh.
And they ask for $17 million. In today's money, which was about $2.2 million, and he Getty told him to go to hell. So they sent him. I thought it was a finger, but it was the ear.
Mm.
They cut off the kid's ear and mailed it to him.
Wow.
And said, "You want the other ear? Well, you give us the money." So he finally paid, and the kid called him up to thank him afterwards, and he wouldn't take the phone call.
Wow.
Now, there's your money. There's your friendship, your loving families. Okay. Charles Lindbergh. You know who Charles Lindbergh
yes.
was?
Mm-hmm.
Lucky Lindy. Well, Lucky Lindy was pro-Nazi, so Hitlerite.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And he had a son, Charles Lindbergh Jr., who was kidnapped.
Yeah.
And you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid was killed.
Mm-hmm.
They paid the ransom. It was a long story, and it was a famous one. You know Frank Sinatra, the singer?
Yeah.
His son, Frank Sinatra Jr., was kidnapped.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he was held for 4 days. And Frank Sinatra paid the $240,000 demand. And the kid was released. He was walking around on the streets. And they recovered some of the money.
Oh, okay.
And the FBI told him to pay the ransom. So when they tell you don't pay, it's nonsense. They want you to pay. Then mm-hmm. Kim Kardashian said she was kidnapped in Paris, but I kind of don't believe that.
Yeah.
And Madonna said, Lady Gaga, Madonna said she was kidnapped, but I kind of don't believe that. And then this guy just was convicted the other day. He said he was the result of some kind of race hatred.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
that wasn't true.
He was lying.
He was
He's
lying.
He's a liar.
Just to get attention.
Oh, here's another one. You ever hear of the Mackle Brothers?
No.
And Marco Island?
No.
Marco Island's on the west coast of Florida.
Okay,
just
yeah.
south
that
of
I know.
South of Naples.
Uh-huh.
And it's a big island. When I came here, it was a swamp, literally. There's nothing. I owned 40 acres on Marco Island with a bunch of guys, and we made a lot of money. When it was in the Rupert Estate, Rupert Beer,
mm-hmm.
and it came out of the estate, and they developed the whole thing. The beach there was empty. It was all sea oats. You could drive your car on the beach.
Wow.
Now it's all these huge hotels and condos.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Barbara Mackle, the daughter of Mackle Brothers developers, in 1968, she was kidnapped. And they buried her in a box for 3 days
wow.
underground. And they had a tube of air. She could breathe through a tube or something.
Oh, my gosh.
And they... the guy that came and came to get her was dressed as a policeman.
Hmm.
And he said, you have to come down
right.
the station. And they demanded $500,000, which is $4 million in today's money.
Oh.
And they found, they captured one of the kidnappers was a woman by the name of Ruth Eisenman Shear. She served 4 years, and they shipped her back to Honduras.
Huh.
She was dressed as a police officer.
Oh, okay.
So what am I getting at? These people are, they have problems. They have problems with everything. The nice thing is they don't have to take out the garbage, mow the lawn, or clean the house,
yeah.
or wash the car, shovel snow.
They have more time on their hands, that's for sure.
They don't have more. They don't have to do the menial things that we have to do. And they have special trains and planes, but they can't go for a walk.
Mm.
They can't go in the park. They can't. They have different soap and towels and food, but they can't have real friendships.
Hmm.
And they don't have privacy. And they're subject to a lot of threats. And publicity, if they do something, and they can't go into a restaurant or a theater, it's an annoyance, and they have to be escorted in and out and protected. And their children are subject to dangers, and they can't go to conventions and mix and mingle and parties. And and people hate you that you don't know. I got a letter the other day because I ran the half marathon and made all the papers. I got a letter from somebody telling me how to find Jesus and that I better start looking for Jesus right away. So people, you know, you subject yourself, your personal life, to all kinds of strange people.
Mm-hmm.
And a nice thing about being very, very rich is that your tax rates are very low. And Warren Buffett said that his tax rate is lower than his housekeeper.
Oh, Wow.
Yeah, and it is, because they get all these benefits.
Yeah.
So, and I told you about the prep schools. They all get in. The rich people don't seem to have as much trouble getting their kids in. Mm. They make special arrangements for them, and they waive the admission requirements, and they want the name. And they have legacy programs at these schools. So if your father or brother or uncle went there, or grandfather, mm-hmm. you become part of the legacy.
Yeah. So yeah, your kid can be a goldfish, but if you have the money, he's in.
Yeah, the Roosevelt family was connected with Harvard. They all went to Groton. President Roosevelt went to Groton, and of course he went right to Harvard. There's a lot of them that are connected with Princeton and Yale. Rosemary Hall is connected with Yale. And I can tell you the schools I did the other day.
Yeah, in the previous episode.
I gave you a list of the schools and who they're connected with.
Yeah.
And they have polo to bring your six horses up. So that's the rich. So what do you learn from the whole thing? You learn that the rich are powerful and the rich get advantages, mm-hmm. and they go to the front of the line, mm-hmm. and they get organ transplants and good medical, and they get very nice clothing. And what you also learn is that they get kidnapped, they have no privacy, they have no real friendships. You're gonna always worry, even in your family, about the money. Your kids, they can't wait till you die. Mm. I was concerned that my kids were gonna jump up and down with pom poms when I died because the money would go to them. So I gave it to them now.
Yeah, that's a good move. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, give it to them in a trust so they know it's there. They don't have to worry and let them draw from the trust while you're alive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I'd take the risk to have more time in my life if I had more money. So
money gives you a lot of
gives you freedom, gives you time,
because you
gives
don't have you. To devote yourself to ordinary mundane tasks.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what life is. It's time. All you have is time.
So we ought to call Warren Buffett up and tell him that you don't get into the University of Pennsylvania and Columbia Law School by being a poor kid. Very hard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. He needs a reality check. Thank you so much, Louis. This was insightful. Until next time.
Thank you for listening. We are excited to announce that Louis now has his own blog. Visit louisres.com to get insightful commentary to the Miami Memoirs podcasts, along with an analysis of current events, as only Louis can provide.